up this morning with the sundown shining in him.
Oh. Where's the money, Lebowski? Where's the f***ing money, head?
Oh, it's down there somewhere. Let me take another look.
I found my mind in a brown paper bag, but then...
106 miles to Chicago. We got a full tank of gas, half a pack of cigarettes. It's dark, and we're wearing sunglasses.
Hit it.
I tripped on a cloud and fell 8 miles high. I tore my mind on a jagged sky.
Okay, you know, you guys aren't privy to all the new so, you know... That's what you pay me for.
I just dropped in to see what condition my condition was in.
Illinois Nazis. I hate Illinois Nazis.
Yeah, let's cut through the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
I lost you $60,000. There is no one who wants to make that money back for you more than I do.
There's just one thing, dude.
What's that?
You have to use so many cuss words.
What are you talking about?
Don't worry, nobody's listening anyway.
I woke up this morning with the sundown shining.
Well, welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Holly. Mr. Matt Lorman on the board. S&P futures up 23. NASDAQ futures up 50. Dow futures up 184. This is a big spin around from last night when S&P futures were down 10 or 11 or 12 or 15, wherever I looked at them. So we have the Fed meeting today. And Kevin, it says here in the headline, ahead of Fed decision. Now, I'm going to say that this 30-point swing, maybe, some people know the decision. Just saying.
It too may be ahead of the Fed decision, hey?
Yeah. So today we're going to have the one bump and somebody else, I don't know who the second person is, that were accused or I guess they've admitted to trading individual stocks while they've been on the Fed board. So what do you think that meeting is going to go like? Are they going to be called out, or are they going to be total deference, or are people very concerned, you know, going to let them know how right it was because it was outside of the alleged quiet period? Or what do you think the tone is going to be with Chairman Powell?
Total Sergeant Schultz.
Yeah, yeah. What do you...
Or no more than 2 degrees away from absolute Schultz. I see nothing.
I'm torn, Kevin, and you're my... management guy, you know, you're never supposed to manage properly, and you have. I'm going to say one of these days, somebody, I don't care who the hell it is, and I really don't care if it's a Democrat, Republican, or green, blue, yellow party, I don't care. Somebody, the limousine has to pull up in front of this meeting, assuming they're even doing the meeting in person. The limousine has to pull up, the president's got to walk in, sit down at the meeting, and said, what the bleep is going on here? By the way, how many of you idiots been trading?
I'm pretty sure the president says that every morning.
He probably does. Probably whoever's president probably says that. But
I'm thinking the current president definitely does that every morning. About three other times during the day, too.
Well, you know, one of the most interesting interviews of people, and even if you don't, you know, if you don't like people, I don't think I never said I didn't like him. I actually kind of like him, but... President Obama, they were interviewing him, and the lady was saying, what's it like being president? And he said, well, you know, one of the oddest things is every week, he goes, something lands on your desk, and you say to yourself, how the hell did this get here? What manner of screw-ups did it take on people to where it lands here? how didn't somebody either see that this was a problem or take care of it before it got here? Because it just frustrates the hell out of you. And I'll bet he's absolutely right, Kevin. I mean,
that's management all the time too.
But I mean, you don't. You like to
develop your team to the point where they know better and that stuff doesn't land there. But you know, and really, what you want is you don't want every off-the-wall thing to land on your desk. What you want is the person who took care of it just say, you know, I'm letting you know just in case you hear anything about this, and I got it.
Well, I mean, you must, even if you're Trump, and I think he honestly spent 90% of his day thinking about himself, but that's another story. And Biden, I think, is lost a lot of what he had, and I think he was too long in government. So, I mean, I have structural issues with both people. I thought Obama was amazingly inexperienced. I mean, somehow the way the somebody paved the road for him to get there. I don't know who the hell somebody was. Our friend still thinks it's the CIA. I don't know if that's true, but anyway, I mean,
I have a theory about that too. But you go on and make your point, and I'll tell you what.
Well, but I'm saying, now you sit there and you go, we've got the market's doing this stuff. You see all, even if you don't know markets like I do, it hasn't been your life, and you don't realize that this information is constantly front run more and more and more by people in government, by Fed announcements, by. And I've sat here doing this show in the morning, and Maddie, when the hell was that when the night before we were down like 25, 30 spoos, and all of a sudden somebody gave a Fed speech in China in the middle of the night, and we came in and were up 50. I mean, talk about 90 points, a one lot, $250 a point times 90, I mean, it's a lot of money. And I think that, you know, people don't realize how much money is flying around based on this stuff. We've had a guest of the show get tossed out of Fed meetings because he asked a question about people front-running Fed announcements. So you got this, all this in the back of your mind, and then all of a sudden one day somebody drops a story on there, and there's some bump from the Fed trading on his own and thinks it's okay. And meanwhile, if you call up your department or whoever the hell runs this SEC, I don't know, God, who does the SEC chairman report to? Is it the Attorney General? I don't know, wherever he reports to. I should know that. Maybe you call him up and say, hey, you know, this is the president. Who the hell are you again? And how many cases do you have of insider trading? And the guy will say, well, gee, I got 400, you know, poking along. Well, any of them, senators, representatives, Fed people, chairman, on the board, boards of any of these companies? Well, we got a couple of board members, but they're from Hong Kong and they're Asian. Really? Here's what I want you to do. I want you to dismiss all those cases. Because you know what? We're not getting the right people. I mean, it's just wrong. It's rotten. It stinks from the top to the bottom. What am I missing?
Well, I don't know what you're missing. We don't. If we're prioritizing cases, we are definitely not prioritizing connected people.
Well, and does that become your right, being connected? I mean, obviously, those people think it does.
What have we said before? They absolutely believe that they're a better class of people, and they're very entitled to all of it. And if you don't arrive thinking that, you do after a while.
And it's not like Maddie's that young anymore, but I'll use him as a. Maddie, this was so much different when Kevin and I were growing up. And I'm going to say people weren't different. I mean, it wasn't like, you know, everybody was cool. But virtually every class of person fought in World War II to varying degrees. Or if you didn't, your brother did or your uncle did, and somebody knew somebody that was lost. So even if you were the chairman of you know, say, Pullman, and you went down to the factory floor and saw some guy welding away or doing some electrical work, that guy might have been a lieutenant when you were a sergeant. There was a much more respect for. There wasn't this, at least in those. There wasn't like the chairman down to people. I'm sure there still was somebody I'm sure the cabins in the lodges still felt they were better than the people that worked at Pullman, whether or not you were a general or whatever you were. But it wasn't anywhere near as protracted as anybody would know thought he was better than somebody else, Kevin. Or if you were head of one of these companies or something. I mean, most people just thought, for the grace of God, you came back from the war, you survived, you went for the GI Bill, and somehow you got promoted, probably because you deserved it. The mentality was just, in my mind, was so much different. And I don't think it's just me looking in the rose-colored rearview mirror. I think it was just a lot different. There were people that really felt like, wow, I'm here because I went to, I got free education because I was the one guy who didn't get shot. I mean, it was just a different mindset, I think. You know, what do you think?
I think you're right, and I'm trying to think of when it changed. You know, I know in the 70s they were talking a lot about you know, business schools not teaching ethics anymore, and not, you know, and there was so much of the, you know, oh geez, the management thinking, you know, hadn't evolved into where it is today. I mean, what I call the real more progressive styles of management that are built around quality management and all the principles, all the Deming principles. So, you know, there was some interim period in there where, we had a lot of people who evolved and they thought, you know, maybe I went to the elite school and therefore I am a just a better class of person.
Well, there is I don't think it started at the University of Chicago. I'm gonna lob a stone here. I'm gonna say, I don't know, it was the Harvard managerial school. Somebody somewhere started the deal where, as a CEO, you were only responsible for the profits of a company. Right, you were only responsible to make money for your shareholders. That return for shareholders. That was it. Where clearly, if you're a broker, I mean that. If you got on TV and said, as a broker, would I have all these clients, my only responsibility is my own bottom line, well, that goes over like a fart in church. I mean, yet if the person from Amazon says that, it's perfectly okay. Yet he has clients, too, and employees and everything else, right? He has customers and employees.
Yeah, Tom, I think it's more, it wasn't as much that people said, started with that the change led with that, I'm responsible for the profitability. It led with market pressure for this quarter's earnings.
Right.
And once that became the focal point, then a lot of things fell into place afterwards.
Well, that was before mid-70s then, because at Chicago, I did a whole, I had a course where half of it was designing management compensation packages that were better than the quarterly stuff, because clearly if you're gonna, you know, if you have four truckloads of total pollution, you're gonna dump them in the river if you're only worried about this quarter. But if you're worried about getting caught and having some massive fine and having to clean it up 5 years from now, you probably wouldn't do it, right? Because if you're still there in 5 years and all of a sudden you get no bonus, or you even take away the bonus you got the year before because you polluted and it costs the company money, if you do it properly, you know, I guess even something like Love Canal and who was it? Woody Outfit? Was it who were the guys that made the outboard motors? Was it? It wasn't Evinrude. Was it Mercury? Somebody who was Waukegan Harbor, where they dumped all the stuff in Waukegan Harbor forever.
I know what you're talking about, and I do not remember which one it was.
But clearly, if you were going to be, you know, if you do what George Stigler said, and you gave somebody, a bonus for a year, but you put 80% of it in escrow to find out how things worked out going forward, nobody would risk that, because the $1 million you saved over 5 years, it cost you $50 million of cleaning Harbor up. So clearly, even if you look at it strictly in dollar terms, if your time horizon's long enough and there's any sort of enforcement whatsoever of pollution laws, it's probably not worthwhile, because it costs a hell of a lot more to clean.
The problem was that the people designing executive compensation plans were reported to the executives who were going to be compensated by those plans.
Right. Well, I mean, I tell you what, when we were designing these, this was so funny, Kevin, talking about you as a professor, everybody would say, okay, here's the company, describe the company, and say, design a compensation package, because this is what we want to do. They want to be here for 100 years, they want to be part of the community, they want to do this, anything. Or maybe not. Maybe they're planning on losing, whatever it was, whatever the company's plans were, you had to design a compensation plan. So it wasn't a huge class, maybe 30 people. So you'd walk in, and the guy'd pick out like five of them, and he'd wing them up on the board, and everybody'd sit there going, that one sucks. you just were hoping yours wasn't the one that was like picked. If you do that, the guy's going to do this. Who the hell wants that? It is really easy to imagine how whatever compensation package you come up with, how somebody will get around it and do something exactly what you don't want them to do.
I mean, there's always perverse incentives.
Yeah, I mean, I'm saying there's some that were better than others, and if it was yours, you fixed it and you realized that there was a better way. But at the end of the day, if somebody really is just a nefarious dude, or if they're doing stuff outside the company. I mean, if you were an Enron and you were trading energy futures outside the place, I mean, there really was nothing internally other than firing your ass that they could do to you where you would make as much money internally as externally. I mean, one of the reasons why this guy at the Kaplan, and I don't know anything about his personal stuff, but I do know this, since before COVID, I used to hang around with a lot of guys from the Fed. Those guys would specifically tell me. I said, well, one of these days you're going to be a governor. And they'd say, I don't want to be a governor. I'd have to take a huge pay cut. Those guys don't make squat. The chairman, I think, you know, this is out of memory, chairman's like in the 150 range. There's a lot of people at the Fed making over two, economists and so forth.
Yeah, but look what you get in speaking fees after you get done.
Well, that's true. I don't know if does a regular governor get that much or just the chairman? Or was it Janet Yellen because she was female and she... I think that was payola for her not going after those people.
Well, yeah. It certainly... Let's put it this way. You hate to have that appearance. You hate to have that opportunity.
You do. I do. They don't care.
To shift gears. Conference basketball tournaments, because I think everybody can relate to this. In a conference basketball tournament, every conference member gets paid for the number of games the conference plays in the NCAA tournament. So the incentive is to let somebody who's never going to make the tournament in a million years win your conference basketball tournament and get you one more team into the into the NCAAs. That's the incentive. So you get to that championship game and you are financially better off losing. Now, do I know of anybody who has ever done that? I don't. Not that it comes to mind. But you know. But why would you want to have an incentive built that way in the first place?
Well, while we're on
this, that's the problem. Is it shouldn't be that way in the first place?
Why? Just out of curiosity, while we're on the subject, as Maddie's girlfriend Paige, whatever her name is, now has a gambling gig on TV. Go along with all the other gorgeous blondes that are on there telling people to gamble on games. How is it that, you know, we went from the Black Sox scandal, White Sox, then the one before, who was the gentleman we had on, Maddie, that said the one before was rigged? That the Cubs threw the series to Boston the year before, was it 1918 or whatever the year before the scandal was?
Did they know what was that success was not? There was not going to be a lot of other chances. Yeah.
That was a guy, Brian Toohey.
Yeah, what was the original curse? Was the book?
That might be right. Yeah,
I think it was the original curse. All right, so we decided that we don't want people riding in train cars and the club car going from city to city with all the gamblers sitting there at the same bar with the players. And people gambling on the games that this was not healthy. Now all of a sudden you have fast forward. We've decided this is the solution for our country, that we're all going to be okay because of sports gambling, and we're going to be able to pay for schools and God knows what else, homes for the homeless and food for the hungry and you name it is going to come out of sports gambling. And yet this is all
for nothing.
Yeah, I mean, but there's never going to be a scandal. There's never going to be any attempt by say the Cubs. Well, I'm not going to say, you know, that now has the, is they're going to put the thing in. By the way, evidently Sox Park now, has, without even being their idea, Manny, they're now getting a gambling thing too, because the Cubs have one and the city wouldn't allow it unless the Sox had one too. I don't know if you heard that.
I didn't hear that.
Yeah, it's special, isn't it? So now all of a sudden, everything's okay. So you got two schlump teams like the Cubs playing the Twins. I don't know if the Twins are out of it. And yet in the sixth inning, you can go make a bet on the runs for the next three inning, and there's no chance anywhere of any relief pitcher throwing one in the dirt to get a couple extra runs for his team when he knows the odds going into the sixth inning. All he's got to do is turn on the friggin' radio or look up at the board in the park. You know, all of a sudden now,
Craig Kimball could do it on purpose, yeah. And nobody would know the difference.
Yeah, well, I mean, how would you imagine it was Mitch Williams, for God's sake? I mean, but what do you now? All of a sudden, this is all fine and okay, and nobody can be corrupted. And in football, we you know what Lou has said when they, the last time, Eddie, since we've been doing the show, there was a labor stoppage or something in football, wasn't there? It was very short. Didn't they walk out of, or there was going to be one?
I know there was a labor stoppage in the early 2000s. I don't know if there was in the last 10 years, but.
Well, maybe it was Lou telling us about the first one and how all it took was like 3 or 4 weeks, and these guys were, not all of them, some guys were totally broke and borrowing money from agents and stuff, and that's why the NFL has a somewhat a comparatively crummy deal with everybody else, because they're not about to walk out for mental or medical and mental stuff for old players or things like that. They don't care because a lot of them, their lifestyle is way beyond even their incredible, their salary. So the chances of, now you're telling me that just because these guys make money, nobody's broke? Anybody who thinks that is a moron, I think.
I think that's true. I think that you could say the same thing about any highly paid profession.
Sure.
You know, the same thing would be true of business executives.
Oh, absolutely. Especially if you...
Physicians, you know, there's always a handful that are financially stressed.
Well, all you got to do is decide somebody doesn't like beer, he likes toot up his nose, and you can get financially stressed real quick, right? No matter how much you make.
Yeah. Yeah, I think it was Richard Pryor's quote where he said, cocaine is God's way of telling you make too damn much money.
Yeah.
Before we get away from it, you know, Obama and you know, the people who think he was engineered into, I think he was, he did a practice run. Hillary was going to win it. He was doing a practice run for the future because he was very young and considered a big up and comer. And he caught fire. Plus, as we have learned numerous times now, Hillary is like the all-time worst candidate ever.
Well, yeah, and then he bumped up against McCain,
and so it fell to him.
Well, the same thing happened with Clinton. I don't think he ever thought he was going to beat Bush that time. It was going to be next time, and Bush just kind of self-destructed.
Well, Ross Perot contributed to the cause for him.
Yeah, what do you think? What do you think history is going to say about Ross Perot? If anybody manages to dig into it,
big ears. Big ears cost the president re-election.
Oh, and he, I think his whole family escaped to Bermuda, didn't they? I think they all died.
No idea. I've totally lost interest in and touch with the Ross Perot saga. What happened there?
I'm sure.
When I think of those times, all I think of is Dana Carvey playing George Bush Sr. and Ross Perot on Saturday Night Live. Sometimes in the same skit. I don't know how they pulled it off, but he would play both of them, and it was great.
Yeah, Bush Sr. just, I don't know, he didn't, Clinton, again, I really think that, well, everybody, Bush was unbeatable, so nobody in the Democratic Party really wanted the nomination, so Clinton wins it, and he just, you know, I think he was going to take one for the team, look pretty good, and next time win, and all of a sudden he's in, which I think is somewhat like the Obama thing, like you're saying, Kevin. I mean, you never really know when it's your time, I guess. Your time is interesting. So what's going on? What do you guys? You came to Chicago, and you were working with the. Speaking of which, the people we met last week, I still was stunned at the one lady who said they're tracking down, they're missing 300 people in their school yet.
Oh, from the school, from the one school. They lost track of them before. When the school shut down, and they have not come back. And part of her job is to see if she can track it down. The woman's title is I forget what it is, but she's in charge of at-risk students. So that deals with a number of services and issues, you know, because they'll have a certain number of homeless or people with, you know, food insecurity issues or, you know, whatever. That's the at-risk student profile. And so she was lucky enough to have to be saddled with the job of trying to track down the missing in action students.
Well, I remember I was joking with her. She was at her former school. She was the dean of discipline, Maddie. I said, "Does that mean you walk around with a paddle?" And she goes, "Oh God, that would be so much easier." I said, "We're talking about fights, arrests." I said, "Arrests in school?" I mean, she goes, "Oh yeah, like every week." And I mean, yeah, I guess I guess the panel wouldn't be much help, but the that's
more like a can of mace.
Yeah, I mean, I just, you know, coming from Maris, where if you were caught out in the hallway, you would be like somebody on a street in Berlin during the night. I can't imagine all this wandering around and people arrest and the drugs going on. I mean, I just that stuff going on in school. It is so foreign to my experience, Kevin. I can't even go there. Was your place like that, or was it, you know, people coming and going?
What? Where I am now?
No. We're at Loyola.
Oh. No. No, it was more like Marist.
Yeah, I mean, Audrey talks about Kelly High School, and she said even then, there was nobody doing anything. I mean, back in those days, there was, you know, public schools were pretty good, too. And she said the difference, I mean, she goes, it was like a train station. I mean, there were classes from, there were so many kids that they had classes from, like, 7 to 5. People coming and going, walking in and out. She says, oh, yeah, some people would, like, miss a class. I go, how the hell would you ever miss a class? I mean, at Marist, you showed up, the doors got locked, and they didn't open them until it was time for everybody to go. I don't know how you'd get out of there. I mean,
even the inner-city schools weren't that way. If you want a movie that sort of gives you the picture of, you know, what late 60s, early 70s was like, even in the rough neighborhoods, Spike Lee's Crooklyn is good for that. It really kind of lays out what it was like, but you could still send, you know, you could still send a kid out to the store with a few bucks to get a carton of milk or whatever. You know, it was those kinds of days. It's changed a lot in over the years, but that's, you know, that's what, more what it was like at the time.
Well, some kid got shot. Talk about deja vu all over again. Maddie, I remember one of Maddie's best days on the show, that is when you gave the summary of the whole thing on Benji Wilson. I thought, Maddie, that should have been on national TV, which you did that day, actually. If you remember, I'm sure you remember doing it, but some kid got shot and killed yesterday. When it set out in front of Simeon High School, okay, maybe it wasn't the same exact spot, but it's got to be the same spot as Benji Wilson, right? Because it's right in Vincennes and 83rd Street. And here, so how far, what year was that, Manny? 1990? 91?
No, it was in the 80s.
80s?
off the top of my head, I'm going to say 86, but I'd have to look it up real quick.
Right, so how far have we come in how many years? What's that, 35?
Not very far.
Yeah, and same place, same spot.
84, sorry.
84. How many cars, I'll tease into this. How many cars of people with my buddy who got his car stolen 2 weeks ago right in my neighborhood, how many cars do you think right now at any given moment during the day are filled with two and three people armed to the teeth just running around trying, either looking for another car to steal, a place of something, or to shoot somebody, Kevin? You think it's 50? Is it 20? Is it 25? I mean, let's...
Or they might be doing, drops and then pick up the cash from previous sales.
Maybe. We're up 22 points, up 41 on the NASDAQ, 22 on the S&P. Again, we got the Fed Watch today, where they're trying to talk about their own misbehavior and top everything else. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to gauge the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other decision. And Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with relevant trade ideas, and equips you with cutting-edge tactics you don't already know. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on pursuing life, luxury, and happiness through sports, fitness, travel, food, spirits, music, and a whole lot more. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Harrell, the Chief. Confused about investing these days? I suspect you are not alone. Investing was never easy, although at times it may have seemed so. I think one reason behind the current concern, although maybe not explained as such, is how the fluctuation in the American dollar and the associated politics is affecting your investments and your wealth. It may not be enough to make some money in your investments. You may need now to make enough to exceed the amount that your leadership is depreciating the value of the dollars you've worked your whole life to accumulate. That same leadership has seen fit to maneuver risk-free interest rates to near zero. Providing positive risk-averse returns in a zero-interest and declining real wealth environment is by far the toughest assignment I've ever had in my years as a money manager. I'm sure that a lot of you have heard that one way to possibly deal with this problem is to invest in so-called hard currencies like silver and gold, the idea being that they will retain their relative value in the face of devaluation of paper currencies like the dollar. To be honest, I have never been a gold bug. I've always had faith that having enough dollars and a good investment strategy was good enough. Now I'm not so sure. But I do know that if I did invest in gold or silver, I'd want to do it in the same manner as we do with PTI for investments in the market, with defined risk. If you feel the need to invest in gold or silver, we can do it using the same strategies that we use for our protected index program. No matter what you invest in, we feel that you need to know and control your risk. Find us at PTISecurities.com. That's PTISecurities.com.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Stocks, jocks,
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tim Howe. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 24, NASDAQ futures up 44, Dow futures up 191. This is a big turnaround again from last night. Now, we were up this much and more yesterday, and then we turned around on the close and finished very shaky. As a matter of fact, just for, as a way of review, yesterday we ended up down 50 in the Dow, down 3 in the S&P, up 32 in the NASDAQ. So that was not the tone of the day, and that was not the day you want after a big sell-off from the day before. From Europe, we got the DAX up 81.5%, FTSE up 82, 1.1%, CAC around up 74, 1.1%. As the we're going to talk about this Evergrande, we're shedding these tensions one day in here. Asia, with Nikkei down 200.7%, Shanghai up 14.4%, Hang Seng up 122.5%. Hang Seng is the one that's been getting whacked up the hardest over there. Bonds up 10-year is up 1 basis point to 1.34. The Bund up 1 basis point to -0.31. Japan unchanged at positive 0.03 there. Made it run up to 0.06 there and came right back. Oil up a $1.02 now to 71.51, so I'm say fairly comfortably over 70. The Brent back up over 75, up 95 cents to 75.31. Natural gas up 2 cents to 4.83. Arabob up 2 cents to 2.12. We've got gold down 40 to 17.73. Silver, however, is maintaining the big gains of yesterday, up 7 cents to 22.68. Copper up 9 cents to 4.22. That's a pretty good movement to copper. It's 2.5%. And we've got the Bitcoin down 189. Bitcoin's been down and quiet the last few days, 41,924. Matty, what do you got for us, traffic, weather, sports?
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning to everyone out there. Off to a good start here on a rainy Wednesday morning as far as the expressways are concerned. Traffic starting to build on the Kennedy and Eisenhower, but no accidents to report. Same for the Stevenson. Southside expressways are looking good. Lakeshore Drive is all quiet. Off the expressways, not much to report there either. Looks like there's one crash in the area. That's in the city, Western Avenue at Pershing Road. There is a crash, but everything else looking good out there. Weather today, similar to yesterday, mild temperatures, rain on and off throughout the day, a high of just 64. Right now it is overcast and drizzling downtown and 61 degrees. For our Phoenix listeners, lots of sunshine and a high of 103 today. Right now it's clear and 74. In sports, the White Sox went into action yesterday with their magic number at 2, and now they're going into action today with their magic number at 2. They lost to Detroit in the afternoon yesterday 5-3, and then watched Cleveland beat up on Kansas City. So no ground was gained. So the White Sox have a chance to clinch the division again today with a win and a Cleveland loss. Cubs were beat at home by the Twins 9-5. Diamondbacks lost to the Braves 6-1. Chief.
Hey, by the way, who ended up winning the Boston game that I was watching most of and then I left? They were getting butt kicked by somebody. I think that they deserve to lose because of. Have you seen the uniforms they're wearing?
They beat the Mets 6-3.
Okay, because they were down 3-3 zip, I think. You see the uniforms they're wearing?
Last night, I did not.
They've been wearing them now for like a week. It's like their version of this, like the South Side and North Side.
Okay.
They are the brightest yellow you've ever
seen. Oh, yeah.
They look
like
Big Bird. What is
those are horrific. I hate the Cubs and the White Sox ones, too.
Yeah.
So, there you go.
But, I mean, they're not that obnoxious.
I'm fine if you want to throw an alternate out there for some reason, for whatever, once or twice.
The reason is to sell uniforms.
We all know that.
Yes.
But this idea now that the Cubs have to wear their navy blue uniforms every Friday home game when they're just atrocious, or the White Sox have to wear their Sunday uniforms, and then they have their South Side uniform. It's like, come on, for God's sake. The Cubs and White Sox have two of the best home uniforms in baseball with the pinstripes, and they're clean, and they look good. Like, you don't need to, you know, go away from that very much. I understand you're trying to sell jerseys, but Jesus.
You want to put what? And why do you think the Irish?
Red Sox do.
Why do you think the Irish throw out the green jersey every few years?
Yeah. Well, the Bears do.
No, they have special jerseys for their road games. So playing in Soldier Field this weekend, I am sure that there are going to be some kind of special uniform just for that game.
If you're Notre Dame and you have probably the best uniforms in all of college football, certainly the most iconic helmet, why the hell would you change that? I mean, I don't get it.
Now you have three to buy. If you get the road uniform, the white jersey and the blue, you're pretty much done for life, unless there's a green one you got to get
something. Well, the Yankees very rarely do any sort of alternates, and I love that. They don't wear dark blue tops ever. They're always pinstripes at home, gray on the road. You never see them in the dark blue. Now, they may have an occasional alternate, but I can't think of one off.
They didn't even really change for the Field of Dreams game.
I know. I love it.
What really bugs me about the Irish doing it is it's just a Me Too thing. You know, they say, well, everybody else does it. We got to jump on that bandwagon, show a little leadership. You know,
I agree.
If this is, we talked this, God, we haven't had a man in forever, Jordan Bressler, our marketing guy.
I got to get Jordan on. He's a really good guest.
He was, but he would say that if somebody else does it and you don't, you're doing your place a disservice because you're disdaining that revenue. You don't want to be a Bo Schembechler who said, well, you know, when you come to Michigan Stadium, it's people leaving their other walk of life, and for 3 hours they should not have to worry about advertisements and the other stuff. Nobody would want that anymore. The idea of if you had a movie theater without commercials, they'd say you were the worst movie theater manager in the world, right?
Oh, yeah. The Cubs get a lot of crap because they haven't done a sponsorship for Wrigley. Same for the Bears.
Oh, but they got all kinds of stuff all over.
Well, I know, but I'm saying it's not you know, called Toyota Park or something.
Well, it's true.
The White Sox have no shame.
Yeah, they haven't sold the naming rights. The Bears can't sell the naming rights because they don't own the stadium.
Yeah, they'll do that so fast if they move.
Control it.
Well, all the other owners are pissed off at them because they don't.
By the way, I do want to, since I won't be here on Friday, if you guys wouldn't mind spending a couple minutes, Kevin, previewing this Notre Dame-Wisconsin game. I'm looking forward to this game. Are you guys going or tailgating or anything?
I'm going, my uncle passed away, and I'm going to St. Louis, and I'll be at a funeral when the game starts, and I don't know how much of it I'm going to see before I get home on Sunday and watch the recorded version. So I think it would be kind of a fun game to attend, but that's not going to work for me this time.
Yeah.
By the way, my uncle was a really cool guy. You know, he was like the ultimate storyteller.
Is your dad your dad's brother or your mom's brother?
BSer, storyteller, traveling salesman from days gone by, and really a hell of a lot of fun. He made it to 90 years old, so
wow.
he did good.
Is this your mom's brother?
Anyway, this game, it should be interesting because Notre Dame's offensive line looked a little bit better against Purdue. You know, it still had a lot of breakdowns, but when I looked at those first two games, Matt, the offensive line was pathetic. It wasn't just bad. It wasn't just not quite up to par. It was awful. And, you know, Jack Cohen, who actually is a grad transfer who came from Wisconsin, their quarterback is kind of a statue back there. He's, you know, he's played pretty well, but he's, you know, he's not very mobile. And so if he doesn't just take two or three steps and then fire, he was going down.
Yeah.
So that was a problem. I think, you know, I don't know enough about, Wisconsin's defensive line to really make a prediction, but I sort of suspect they aren't bad because I can't remember the last time I saw a Wisconsin defense that was bad. So I think it could be a kind of a long day for the Irish. Wisconsin, I believe, is like a 3-point favorite or something. I can't remember what the betting line was, but I think it's deserved.
Well, for once, the Irish have a lot of people in the skill positions and nobody on the line. It was always the other way around for decades.
Believe it or not, yep. Wisconsin is a 6.5-point favorite, according to
it's up to 6.5 now.
What I'm looking at right now, which is surprising to me because Wisconsin is 1-1, and their win was against a cupcake. Their loss was at home against Penn State, who, you know, Penn State's good. They're ranked in the top 10, but that was just a defensive slugfest. Neither offense could get anything going. And I think Notre Dame, I agree, they struggled the first two games, and I think we know now that Florida State is really bad. But I think Purdue is actually pretty good, and they dominated Purdue in that game. And
I think Toledo went out and played somebody like Colorado State, who's really bad, too, and got their butts kicked. So,
yeah.
You know, it's not like they're a really good MAC team that gave Notre Dame a tussle, either. They're not that good, either.
Right. So, the first...
Purdue, I actually thought that Purdue could wind up winning that game, and they didn't. But really, the entire difference in that game for Notre Dame was two players. Kyle Hamilton, their defensive back, made some absolutely fabulous plays, including one that, you know, if he didn't make the tackle, you know, right at the line of scrimmage, it was a touchdown.
He is very special.
Nowhere to do it. And then Kyron Williams, their running back, and it was really kind of a cool run because it was, you know, it was like a rugby scrum, and he broke out of it for a really long run. But it was like he just went in there and got really small, and kind of stepped his way through, and all of a sudden burst out and turned on the Jets. But really, it was those guys that made the plays, and not a lot of other people. So. If they, you know, like Tom said, they have some talent at their skill positions. If they can get some of those guys involved, that would be great, but they have to get them involved.
Well, the other teams have figured out that...
They're a really good tight end, too, by the way.
Well, I'm saying they've figured out that they have a tight end they actually have to cover. And once they started doing that, you know, then you get, you know...
Well, I would 100% take the Irish in the points here if it stays at 6.5. I can promise you that. The weather's supposed to be perfect, like low 70s and sunny. Should be fun. Should be a packed house and a lot of fans on both sides.
I would love to go if it wasn't for every memory I have of going to Soldier Field, getting there and coming home is bad.
That's not an easy place to get in and
plus
out
it's
of.
Plus, it's 11 o'clock in the morning. And
I love the 11 o'clock games. Those are the best. You're home by 3 o'clock? What's better than that?
I think there's a good chance we'll be at the Tripoli because the lady next door went to Wisconsin and she's been at me to go watch it with her.
Oh, that's not a bad option either.
Yeah. So, anywho, change... both of you dudes, since...
By the way, I don't think Kevin heard you. Was your uncle on your mom's side or your dad's side?
My mom's side.
Okay, would I have ever met him?
Good question. You may have at some kind of a service or another. You may have met him at my mom's.
That's probably true. Were your brothers?
Yeah. So, yeah, but anyway, yeah, that, you know, it's interesting, the sides of the family, because I have really good relationships with all of my cousins on my dad's side, but, you know, it's not the same level of closeness that we always had with my mom's side of the family. And so, you know, this is definitely, you know, despite the circumstances, I'm looking forward to the weekend because I get to see people I haven't seen since last summer.
Well, I think that... Kevin and I, even though we think differently about a lot of things, there's a few things that are similar. Well, my dad died when I was four, but yours, you were what when your dad died? 12 or something?
14.
14. So, your uncles, if they're around and they care, become a much bigger part of your life than normal. I mean, mine sure did.
That's true. Yep.
And, I mean, hell, they were there. There wasn't a, after my dad died, there wasn't a 2 days that went by that an uncle didn't stop by. I mean, there was always a male around, you know. So, you know, some huge guy would say, "You mind your mother? Are you here?" And then walk out the door, type of thing. Okay, I think I will. But I mean, the family's generally.
Yeah, but I know your mother. She would have intimidated you too.
Oh yeah, yeah. Well, there was even no shrinking. But the 50s mom was not a shrinking violet. That's for sure. Anywho, hey, I got a quick question while we still have some time, and it has to do with the media response to this Evergrande thing. And of course, Russell will be on in a bit where he will talk about somebody who was banned from the industry, and he'll tell the whole story, 10 years ago for coming out and saying 10 years ago in Hong Kong that this company was basically a sham and had too much debt, so they banned the guy. Now, his ban is almost up as the place is going under. But now this is a you know, we talked about it.
First words and first public utterance. Told you so.
Yeah, no kidding. And then it'd be in for another 10.
Get you another 10, wouldn't
another
you?
10, yeah. Well, we've got, you know, we had hints of this last week. You know, the market down somewhat on Friday and basically gets its ass kicked on Monday. We come back a little bit on a close, but it's, you know, it's a problem. So now these guys, all of a sudden you hear, you know, $300 billion in debt, which probably is a lot more than that. You have no idea which banks are involved. You have no idea if banks are going under. I mean, you don't know how much of it's current. You know, I mean, nobody knows anything about this stuff. But you do know that coming out of China, when you get this kind of, I think you know, if you get this kind of news, it's bad. I mean, when they told us they had, you know, 15 people sick with the COVID, guess what? It was a little worse than that, right? Just a tad. So we're talking about a place where you can't believe a word they say. I'm gonna just speak off the top of my head here. Can't believe a friggin' word they say. And yet you have immediately people jumping to the defense on this end. Goldman Sachs, oh no, here's a bunch of stocks you should buy over there. Everybody here who has investments in China is now telling you how cool things really are over there. Which is what I notice when I'm asking Matt, is this just something because I know something about the industry, or does this happen all over the damn place? So now here, this Evelyn Chang writes this article today. Here's why the Evergrande crisis is not China's Lehman moment. Worries about the highly indebted property developer China Evergrande's ability to pay interest on its U.S. dollar-denominated bonds has prompted comparisons to the collapse of Lehman Brothers in 2008 and a subsequent financial crisis. By the way, Lehman did not cause the financial crisis. They were just the first person in. They didn't get bailed out. Another group of people were just as bad as them, but they got bailed out. So let's start with that line, which isn't correct. When it comes to the actual scale of impact, analysts, whoever the hell they are, who are these alligators? Analysts point out that the Evergrande holds land while Lehman held financial assets. Okay, so you don't have the financial assets, but other people have lent money to you. So there's like no connection between the land and money? I think maybe there is. International Monetary Fund chief economist, he's another chief, a lot of chiefs in this world, Gita Gopinath, told Reuters this week, the organization believes China has the tools and the policy space to prevent this from turning into a systematic crisis. What, all right, you guys, Maddie, you're much more of a wordsmith, what the hell does policy space mean?
I don't know, I like it.
It's beautiful though, isn't it?
Yeah, what do you think, good name for a rock band? Rock band, softball team, racehorse, what do we think?
It's certainly going to title this show.
Yeah, but I mean, what?
Yeah, it's already going to be memorialized.
But so,
but, yeah, I think next year you change the softball team name to Policy Space.
I'm going to say my definition is going to be Chief's definition in Webster. Then it would be Chief's, not Webster. BS that hasn't come out yet, is that Policy Space?
It could be, yeah.
Lies you haven't told yet?
That would be the literal translation. Yeah.
Lies you haven't told yet? I mean, what are we even talking about? So they come out with the woes are not going to be like a Lehman moment, blah, blah, blah. But here's the one. However, when it comes to the scale of potential impact on international financial markets, analysts point to a major difference between Evergrande crisis and the Lehman collapse. Evergrande holds land while Lehman held financial assets. So the debt that's behind the land is not a financial asset.
Let's go further. What financial assets screwed everything up in those days?
It was mortgages.
Mortgage syndication?
Yeah. So Evergrande has cash flow problems, but talk of systematic risk is a bit overdone, frankly. So, okay, now the question comes down, you have cash flow problems, now who aren't you going to pay? Now, if it's a bank that's wobbling and you're not going to pay them, well, now they've got problems. And all the people on the other side of their debt has problems. This is not, no man can do one thing in the financial, and I don't know anything about this. All I'm saying is a massive problem with a company this big on Friday is not fixed by the next Wednesday. That's my only opinion on this, because I honestly don't know. But So
what is driving some of this this type of analysis and just generally the outlook of business when it comes to China?
Wait a minute, that's my question to you guys. I'm sure.
I have an answer. I was going to ask you.
Well, I'm going to say it's got to be the fact that Goldman's got nothing but money over there, so they're going to tell everybody, keep your hands in the boat, don't rock the boat, everything's okay. That's the motivation. I mean, you look at what this leader is doing over there. If I had any investments in China, I'd be going, how can I get my money back? And this is, now, Gwen, this is the first we've heard of this. This is dollar-denominated debt. These are direct loans from U.S. people to this company, not necessarily through the China system. Now, the stuff in the system, the banks and everything else over there that they've lent money to these guys, that's like problem number one. Now, does a bank over there have problems with Goldman or some bank over here, or a bank in Hong Kong that has a connection with our people? I mean, it's like piggy move up. It's all over the place. I mean, the entire financial system is totally tied together. I mean, I don't think, Lakeside Bank is necessarily tied into, some regional bank in China, but to say there's no connection whatsoever in the system is probably not right either. But now the idea is, why is it, now what are the amounts, I'm going to say the $320 billion in debt probably does not even include the dollar-denominated loans, Kevin, because I don't think they're even counted by the China side. I could be wrong there. But what would possess...
What this all is really about is everybody wants access to the Chinese market, and they will do whatever they can to get it, because the Chinese market is just so huge for any product or service. It's so huge and it's such a big opportunity that everybody has sold their souls to get it. And so now whatever the bidding is of the Chinese Communist Party, they exert the pressure on the businesses and say, you want to continue to access to our market? Fine, here's what you have to say. That's true of media as well. We're just so compromised in so many ways that all we're going to get is BS out of this.
Well, here's
and it's going to be well-orchestrated BS. I got to admire that, I suppose, but nevertheless.
Well, here's a guy, Rob Carnell. Now, here's a job. Now, we're going to get just the right story out of this guy, right? Regional Head of Research for Asia-Pacific at ING said Wednesday on CNBC, let's face it, this is not Lehman's, this is not LTCM, Long-Term Capital Management, for those who don't remember, referring to a large American hedge fund, Long-Term Capital Management, that failed in the 1990s. It's not a hedge fund with massive leverage positions or a bank whose financial assets are hurtling towards zero. It's a property development firm with quite a lot of debt. $300 billion-plus, thereabouts, in dollar terms. All right, now, wait a minute. The people, the Lehman fiasco was not the pieces of property, right? It was their leveraged debt on the property. And Lehman was essentially a bank at the time, hedge fund. But now, the properties had their own problems that had issues that we had to sort through, okay? But the fact is, now why in this case, if you step at one step up, why isn't the person who loaned these people the money, just like Lehman, in trouble in China? Why are we supposed to make that disconnect here when the connection was made here? I mean, if I had to pick apart this article, am I right, Kevin, or not? I mean, what makes them think the person who owns the debt isn't leveraged? That's what happened here, right?
And you know, so, you just you back up. It really. And I don't know what the debt structures look like. If it's a bunch of syndicated loans, or if it's all in with a few big players, or exactly how it you know how it looks. I haven't paid close enough attention to have that. But either way, you're going to back up, and you know it. The more interesting part isn't that there whether or not there'll be carnage, because there will. The interesting part is going to be who gets out clean, and who gets out relatively clean, and who takes the pipe.
Well, plus you have this feeling that if it's anything like here, if these guys are in trouble today, they were in trouble 3 or 4 years ago that a third grader could have seen, and yet banks will continue to give them money to prop them up, to not have to say, okay, this let's see, you're in for, well, they did this with, you know, I don't keep losing the name, but it's current. They did this with Trump at Deutsche Bank, right? One part of the bank was foreclosing on him, and another part said, well, we don't want that to happen. They gave him another loan. So
and in real estate development, that's very common because the real estate developers will bankrupt the project, you know, at the blink of an eye. If it's not going well, you know, they just bankrupt it, and everybody else is left holding the bag. And the bank, you know, Deutsche Bank was probably pretty smart about that. That they knew if they redid the debt, that they would have a chance of getting out, reasonable, whole or close to whole. But that's not the way it always works. In fact, that's not the way it usually works. It usually winds up being exactly what Trump did a number of other times. And what every other real estate developer does is you just bankrupt the project. It's its own incorporated entity. So you just bankrupt the project, and everybody, and you say, I'm out. You know, you're just like Kramer walking in there and slapping that dollar down on the counter and going, I'm out. everybody else has got to suffer now.
Well, it's even more bizarre because sometimes we've done this as a country when we loan money to like Argentina and places like that. And I'm sure I'm not privy to this, but what we would do is we'd send him, it was a non-performing loan, we'd send him some more money. And I'm sure you've heard of this in the banking area. Kevin, okay, we send Argentina another $1 billion. Well, they turn around and from the billion we just sent them, they'll return $200 million and say that was interest. And we'd now say it was a performing loan and take it to income. I mean, that is the dumbest thing I've ever heard. Yet people do that. People have done that all the time at all levels, right? You increase the loan, and the money comes back to you, and you take it as income and interest, even though you basically just pissed away another $800 million, right?
Yeah, no special reserve for it either.
No, whatsoever. So anyway, Kevin, I won't say enjoy yourself in St. Louis. Hey, it's not a great place to go, and you're going for a funeral, but it's a kick from where you are. It's at 6 hours.
It's about 6 hours of driving, yeah. And there's not a good way to get there from here. You know, by the time I go into Chicago, catch a flight, rent a car, and all of that stuff, by the time I do all that, it'd take me 6 hours anyway. So I might as well just get in the car and go.
Yep.
Although being old, I get I get kind of sore sitting in the car. So it's probably going to be more like a 7.5 hour trip after I stop for a break a couple of times.
Okay. Well, drive safe. We'll talk to you Friday first. Anyway, S&P futures up
22. Hey, you'll talk to me Friday and tomorrow night ethics class. We're watching Smartest Guys in the Room.
Really?
Should be a fun discussion.
Yeah. Good luck with that. S&P futures up 23. NASDAQ futures up 42. Be right back, Mr. Russell Rhodes.
Are you one of the millions of people who suffer with pain? Do you wake up in the morning with stiffness in the lower back or neck? Why are you using medication to cover up the symptoms without treating the actual cause? Painkillers, muscle relaxants, and anti-inflammatories are not the answer. At ChiroMed, physicians are trained to detect the cause of your symptoms and to correct the underlying problem. If you're ready to listen to common sense and do what it takes to make changes in your body that can affect your health for the rest of your life, give ChiroMed a call and set up a complimentary consultation. They are located in Orland Park and can be reached at 708-403-2727. 20,000 patients over 22 years have been treated at ChiroMed, and over 90% of them have had positive results without medication or expensive surgery. Isn't it time you did something good for your body too? Give ChiroMed a call. 708-403-2727. That's 708-403-2727. Let's get you pain-free and living again.
The This self-directed trading is a lonely job. Online trading is not as easy as point and click.
No, it's not. Everyone, even professionals, need to share ideas and think out loud every now and then.
That's what I like about PTI Pro Direct. Their staff of former option floor traders really helps me choose the right strategy for trading option volatility and plan the time decay for my covered writing program.
Yep, nothing can replace years of trading experience to stop you from making that dumb trade and for saving a few bucks. We've all been there and done that.
Yeah, I have access to all that great trading advice and experience for just a penny a share for stocks, $1 for equity options, and $1 minimum a trade.
Our clients at PTI Pro Direct can call when they need a little help on a trade or just to talk about the market in general. We trade every day. We love this stuff.
That's what I like most about PTI Pro Direct. Cheap prices along with great advice from real floor traders. It's the best of both worlds.
Tell your friends. That's PTIProDirect.com, PTIProDirect.com.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Hear ye, hear ye! The Homer Broadcasting System is on the air!
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control!
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
There's something happening here.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Al. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. SP Futures up 23. NASDAQ Futures up 46. Russell, how are you, bud?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing all right. I'm anxious to have you on because of your knowledge of China, and I can't believe the people that are opining
China.
In. People opining in about how good everything is. You know what this kind of reminds me of is, who's your hero, Manny? Dick Vitale?
Sure. Love Dick Vitale.
He's the kind of guy that if you got a basketball team, you know, that all of a sudden you lose your starting point guard on a Monday, and on Thursday night you get him back, and of course he was just arrested for like first degree murder, and Dick Vitale would be on, yeah, you know, there he is, back playing guard for SMU where he belongs. The coach talked to the prosecutor, and everything's good. You know, so I feel like that with I feel like that with this Evergrande.
The Evergrande thing, here's the curveball that's gonna get you really fired up and probably on a 10-minute monologue, but I know who the counterparties are. And it's bad. It's really, really bad. They raised money and they lost this money in a lot of different ventures, but they raised money by selling structured products to retail investors that they can't pay back. That's the counterparty on all of this. So you have a ton, and I mean a ton, of middle-class type folks in China who basically lost their retirement.
Okay, well, start from the beginning.
Evergrande.
Okay, now are they essentially created financial assets Do they have a bank or a broker dealer where they could create these, or did they go through somebody else?
Yeah, I don't know how the legal structure works over there. All I know is that they created structured products that guaranteed like maybe a 10-13% return for individuals, and that was, you know, where they were getting the capital from to go out and get involved in not just the real estate market. Dude, they own a soccer team over there. They've got like 200 plus subsidiaries that they've done all kinds of stupid stuff with, and a lot of the subsidiaries are places that they just go throw the losses like Enron did, so that their books still look okay.
This thing
is far reaching, and I think it's actually going to have major social repercussions over there.
All right, we're starting out 2 minutes into you being my co-host.
Mm-hmm.
We're already on chessboard number three.
Yeah.
All right. What the hell is a structured product? I remember when the CBOE hired. Remember the bump the CBOE hired to do our structured products, that he had to come in as an executive VP or whatever the hell he was. He didn't do anything. What was that guy? He was from the Amex.
Yeah, they actually have Best Financial makes structured ETFs using option strategy.
Okay, so
but
we have
when stock, you give when yeah. you give the money, when you give the money to Vest, they in their ETFs, so they have to hold something to back them. They put on option positions that will replicate maybe a maximum of 8% upside, but you're going to be buffered against a drop in the S&P 500 between down 5% and down 15%. And there are securities to back that. I don't think Evergrande has securities to back the products they directly sold to folks.
If you were to give
a ETF structure.
Right, so if an exchange, the normal exchange that you and I know, various kinds,
mm-hmm.
you more than me since you work for there, but there's stock exchanges, there's options exchanges, there's bond, there's futures exchanges, there's commodity exchanges. Those are the things where people trade essentially with one another through brokers and so forth, okay? Then there's people uh-huh. like me and you from various times where you can give me money and I would structure with, you know, after talking to you of a long period of time, I would structure something for you. Maybe we would protect your stock positions with some options because you're willing to give up a little of the upside to not have as big of a risk on the, whatever it is. We would structure something around your stock position or your S&P position or whatever it is to where your account is essentially a structured risk something. But if you say this is the formula we're going to use, be it a covered writing thing or a put protected thing. If we go out and say we're going to register this as a strategy and actually is becoming and becomes a product that we'll sell to people, you just buy into it rather than having an individual account with me or somebody, then now that becomes an exchange traded structured product, correct? Did I say that rightly? That now becomes an exchange traded structured product that you and I can buy into.
I think it's more like an investment contract.
Well, same place, yeah. You're in the wrong spot. You're in the wrong spot in the room there, bud. We can't hear you. Can you hear me now?
I can hear you. Yeah, I was having a little. My headset kept cutting in and out. I just got rid of it. That was the problem.
Well, you might want
to. I don't think these are not publicly traded structured products. These are individual investment contracts.
Okay, so they're, well, I was trying to say that on an exchange, they would be, that's what the CBOE would do or somebody. They would put these together and they would trade. You're saying these were directly issued by the company
yeah.
somehow,
it's
even
like
though.
It's like if you went, I'll break it way, way, way down. It's like if you went to, to Chase and you bought a 2-year CD and they took the money and lost all the money so they didn't have it anymore. That's really what I mean. That's what has happened is, and I think that's why the big financial institutions are saying it's nothing to really worry about because the counterparties are a bunch of individuals.
So it's don't worry. They're not worried about it, so you shouldn't be worried about it.
Exactly, but I mean the Chinese government. I just think the Chinese government will make all the people whole. And this sounds familiar. Printing some cash.
Okay, yeah.
I do think this will degenerate into some major protests.
Okay, so what you're saying is that this Evergrande, they just weren't, Chief and Russell's, you know, we built 500 apartments and we can't sell them, but that's all we ever did. You're saying these guys are involved in banks,
oh,
sports
my,
teams,
right.
you name it.
They are more like we had a long discussion about this in my class last night as well, and they're more like a financial supermarket than just a property company. You know, like Citigroup does just all kinds of things.
They're almost like AIG.
Like I said, they actually, I mean, they invested in a soccer team. They got all kinds of weird subsidiaries, and they've been raising the money from individuals, and there's not going to be money to pay individuals of one business that then creates their own bank and does a few other things.
Well, you can't get that big over there without somebody and somebody's, a huge group of people in government, having their fingers somewhere in his pie, right?
Exactly. Exactly. The only way that I see it becoming a big financial problem for us is if instead of printing money, the Chinese government does decide to bail them out and, you know, comes in and dumps a bunch of U.S. Treasury bonds.
Well, do you have any of this article I was reading earlier? I don't know if you were listening. They started talking about the size. They didn't say the size, but they mentioned the name, which means the fact that they put it in there makes me think it's pretty big. They mentioned the amount of dollar-denominated debt that is now not performing. How much? Mm-hmm. First of all, if these guys say they're in hack for $300 billion, I'm gonna triple that.
yeah.
But I mean, how much of that is dollar-denominated? Do you have any idea? I mean, somebody here is.
I don't know on that part. But what I kind of pieced together with that is they cannot make payments to people in China, and it's not even going to make the news. They miss a bond payment over here, and everybody really starts focusing in on that company. So you got to figure that they're really in trouble if they're going to do something that's high profile, like not pay people back over here.
Well, without knowing what's on anybody's balance sheet, and that's why it really, to be honest, Russell, it pisses me off when people, because of their position. I mean, I don't know, I could never do this. That's why probably I'm not as rich as these guys, but I could never have a whole bunch of stuff in China for me and my clients. So this morning I'm going to start the show by saying, don't worry about anything in China, everything's okay. But clearly other people are capable of doing that. I mean, right? I mean,
mm-hmm.
If you had to, on Monday, Goldman had an article about Goldman and their five biggest, best picks in China. Now, something weird's going on with this Xi Jinping. I mean, he's torpedoing the casinos, and he's pulling back on now gaming and a bunch of other stuff. I mean, whether or not it's right or wrong, I don't know. But the fact is there, if we could put up a list of 20 people here that basically have their more than one finger in the guillotine over in China, if we knew who those peoples were, should we be worried?
I think there's two components to that. Should there be worry? Absolutely. Should we be worried? Not as much. I think one of the benefits over the last 2-3 years has been that we're not as intertwined with China as we have been in the past. So a big failure might not, reverberate over here as much as it could have 3 or 4 years ago. I don't know how much. I don't know what their bond issuance is in the United States, but I think I really do think that the biggest fallout from this is going to be a lot of protesting and whatnot over there, which may lead to more trouble internally for them.
Well, if you had to put a,
which personally I think is okay if they if they turn inward and they have to keep their own house in order. We maybe don't have to worry as much about them, completely ruining Hong Kong or going into Taiwan or whatever.
Well, Russell, I spend my day worried more about my clients than the market, but I'm always stunned that the epilogue of one of these fiascos will be at long-term capital, be it Argentinian debt, be it our mortgage crisis. There's going to be some bank that you never heard of. The first island bank of Crete, you find out 3 years later, had a boatload of money in U.S. mortgage. I mean, it's impossible for me, for sure, and I don't know about you, to have any idea where these tentacles go. I mean, I have to believe that there's people here that are up their eyeballs, this China problem. Now, if it's whether that means if it's just 2 or 3 companies down the block and they go out and we never miss them, I guess it could be that. The banks seem to be on the top end, fairly well capitalized, but I don't know. Can they handle a you know, a $20 billion hit from a Chinese bank that they're involved in. I don't know if they're that well kept. Does the Fed have their eye on it, or are they worried more about insider trading? I mean, we clearly didn't have our eye on the ball with the Japanese banks in the mortgage stuff and how much money was coming over here from Japan that was essentially being borrowed there and lent here for a 4% spread or whatever the hell it was. They clearly missed the ball on that. I mean, do you trust these people? I was going to say something nasty. Meeting today, all the minute they're circling the wagons over their own people that are getting trouble. Now, do you think they have a real solid idea of the money flow back and forth? I mean, if you walked into this Fed meeting, would you say, give me the number and dollar, a total number of dollar denominated debt in China? Would they have a clue? That's what they're supposed to do all day, right?
China is just such a black hole as to what goes on over there, and what we see going on over there, or the absolute honesty around everything is absent, So there are a ton of unknowns, but the one thing that I do know through the reading that I've done on this is that the people that are going to end up holding the bag are, middle class folks in China.
Well,
they really are, and they'll there's not an FDIC bailout, but I think that actually, I think there's this mentality in China that has actually, I guess, started to work its way over here, that if something really bad happens and, an investment company loses all your money, that the government's going to take care of you.
But a real lot of people over there that have that kind of money, from what I've gathered from the people who have come to our firm and have, been here for a couple of weeks, so we did lectures and stuff for them, the people that have that kind of dough work for the government.
These are folks that aren't necessarily working for the government, or I guess everybody technically works for the government.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
But it's people like you and me that don't have a whole ton of alternatives as to where to put our money, and got talked into doing something that'll give me a nice 10% return.
But when you say middle class people in China, if it's a $50,000 investment in Evergrande, it's not coming from the guy in the Nike factory. For the people that have, the people that I know from creatures here in Chicago that have sort of sponsored these guys, the guys that come over here with the $5 million and hire 10 employees here or buy a company so they can get citizenship right away because they employ 10 people, they're not a regular schmo.
No.
If they didn't work for the government, they had a son that worked or a daughter that worked for the government that got a piece of some import export gig. I mean, you don't get a container to land over there without paying somebody. So,
right.
So I think to the extent that these guys are taking money out of their own pool, as it were. I mean, I don't know that many people from the Nike factory are walking out of the Friday's paycheck and putting money in Evergrande. Maybe they are, but I don't know.
I don't really know. I just know that I don't know the composition of their customers. Hell, they probably don't even know the composition of their customers. But I do know that where the money, it's like who lent them the money to do some of the things that they're doing, that they did, that turned out to not be profitable. It's individuals.
Okay.
And it's not, so if you're a big bank and you look at Evergrande's problems, you're just like, well, it's not that big of a deal. There's no big systemic counterparty risk. Well, the counterparty is a lot of folks that are basically losing their retirement unless the government steps in and does something for them. And the government's alternatives, I guess, they can just print cash, make everybody whole, or they can monetize some things they own, and one of the things they own more of than anything else are our treasury bonds. So that's, I would keep a really close eye on treasury yields and see if they unexplainably start to move up, which would indicate a big seller of the bonds. We talked about this a while back. Russia got out of all of our bonds, and you you could see it in the Treasury yield for like a week or two, and then it just came up right back down to a normal level. Where, but I know from seeing how China trades, if they decide to dump our bonds, they're going to do it like they're going to do it quickly, and it could have like this unexplainable catastrophic move in our bond market for a couple of days, and then come right back to normal.
Well, the now when you say normal. Last week, the Fed ponied up $90 billion on the balance sheet.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you
bring that up a lot where the Fed is, you know, the buyer of all of these things. I wonder, you know, the Fed will know, everybody in that area, in that market, will have a pretty good idea if China is having to sell bonds to raise cash for them. And I just wonder what the Fed's attitude would be about that. Are they gonna, you know, are they gonna step in and take some losses by helping Evergrande or the Chinese government or whoever ends up needing to raise the money, help them get out of their position, or are they gonna step out of the way and, you know, let them take it on the chin a little bit?
I think that they have one arrow in the quiver, or they have 100 arrows in the quiver, and every one of them says print money.
Yes, I kind of hope they let them suffer a bit if it comes to that one. Just because if you make big mistakes, you should suffer a little bit.
Well, they've gradually
automatically failed out.
This rustles off the top of my head, but I think they used to be for a while. They were our biggest offshore owners of our bonds, but they were up to 20-some percent of the bonds, and I think they've ducked under. I think Japan's back being number one. Mm-hmm. I believe. I might look that up on the break. But, hey, I have a question. When we this is a tease. We have a few minutes. So when you – this is just me out of my international economics, which was like a long time ago, and you're still teaching, so you should – by the way, did you ever teach a course on that?
I'm terrible at international.
I had trouble in that course too, but I tell you what.
Yeah, there are a couple of weak spots, and that's definitely one.
Well, usually I was one of the brighter bulbs in the class, but they had some guys there that had studied like in France and Britain in my MBA class. Mm-hmm. They knew that crap way more than me, because I'm some schmuck from Chicago. All he ever had in his pocket were dollars. I knew you could. If you were going to Europe, you better go get something else. If you wanted to buy a beer, that's about all I knew. But those guys could tell you, this bank did this, this one had to do that. I mean, it was second nature to them. I mean, how this stuff all works. Anyway, my question to you is, if I want to invest in a company in China or even a company that has listed on the stock exchange or something, I essentially can go to, you're not going to go to PTI, but we might be able to do it through our RBC, Royal Bank of Canada, but we've never done it. If you want to get the money over there, if it's Russell and Chief and Maddie Inc., and we got a whole bunch of wampum, if we want to send money over there, we're going to essentially go to our bank. They're going to ship it to probably a bank in Hong Kong or someplace, and it's going to be converted into Chinese local currency, correct? And we're going to make our investment in XYZ. I mean, that to me is like the normal way of doing it. So we have currency risk and we have risk in XYZ, correct?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the normal way. But now if China, you know, puts the kibosh on that and said, no, we're not going to do that anymore, how exactly does dollar denominate, how do you make the transfer? Man, I know this is probably a really simple question. You wonder why I'm asking it, because I should know this. How do I make the transfer? How do I write a check directly to XYZ in dollars and have them be able to use it? And how do, it's got to be something the Fed can track. I mean, where does that even go? The check can't come back from a region. I mean, this guy can't walk into his local bank in Xing Xing Province and walk in with my check for dollars and cash it there and have it come back through the Fed system to my bank, and I get it on my in my statement. I mean, how do I even give somebody in the middle of China? I could put them in a briefcase and we can meet in Singapore someplace. I hope we didn't get undressed on the airplane or something. And I could give the guy a briefcase full of $100,000. But barring that, how the hell do I get him that dough on a dollar denominated investment?
I assume it gets wired over to them somehow.
But somewhere, someplace, there's got to be a bank in the middle, and he can't use it unless it gets turned into the local currency. And then I'm curious as to how this has to be something that can be tracked by the Fed if they wanted to. But where would it even come from? Where does my I don't think I can wire dollars from Lakeside Bank to a regional bank in China, can I?
You can wire transfer things to China. I don't know, Lakeside might use Citigroup or one of those larger banks.
Yeah, I mean, I walk into city and say,
is it called the SWIFT system? I can't remember but there is a system in place where you can, they have those electronic communication networks that kind of act like stock trading venues. There are, I feel like it's the SWIFT system, but I can't remember the exact name of it. But there's a system in place that facilitates all the international transfers like that.
Well, I guess
and all the big money center banks are involved in it.
Well, I guess what I'm thinking, Russell, is maybe it stays in dollars, and this person, there's a bank in, what's that wacky island that has all the banks of the money laundering island in the South Pacific.
Are you talking about Cyprus?
No, South Pacific. Anyway, there's some place down there where, remember the book the lady wrote about laundering money, and she went to all these places, and she went down there, and she got mugged, and she got hurt?
I don't remember.
Yeah, but she wrote a book or a big story. Was it on CNBC or one of these business things where she actually went to Cyprus and she went to Bermuda. She went to every place to find out where all this stuff was happening. She ended up at this island down there where nobody ever shows up. It's all just wired. And she got seriously mugged and beat up, and to the point where she was, a long recovery. One thing you could do, I guess, Russell, is you could keep it in dollars, and then if you're an auto company and you want to buy tires, then you ship the dollars out, and you don't ever bring them in. You just leave them somewhere else, and you use them when you need dollars. I guess you could do that, right?
I guess you could do that. I really don't know if a Chinese bank is willing to hold dollars for you. That goes beyond my scope.
Well, this whole line of BS that I'm coming up with, it's not BS, is Should the Fed, if you ask them today how much dollar denominated debt is in China, would they have some sort of an answer? And I think the answer is yes.
It's a trillion of U.S. Treasury debt.
You're talking about regular U.S. Treasury debt,
not any of the other stuff. And I know that they hold, they held Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae debt back around 2008, they were under the impression that it was backed by the U.S. government, which started to create problems.
Oh, that's a problem, yeah. Well, I mean, a lot of people did, because wasn't the only stock that would be good capital in a U.S. bank was Fannie and Freddie Preferred, that ended up being worth nothing?
Mm-hmm.
We did the two-step on our own people. S&P Futures up 25, NASDAQ Futures up 59. Russell, get prepared when you come back. You explain to us why exactly we're up today when we started up down last night. What is the Fed going to say to what do they say this morning they have to do? They have to soothe the markets. They're going to soothe us today. We'll be right back. Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you! Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck, get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. We've talked a lot on the show about risk and suitability, about how your portfolio should match your age, income, and risk appetite. It's been hard for investors to maintain that suitability in the last several years due to a Fed strategy that has driven interest rates to virtually zero. You may have even heard that the Fed was trying to drive conservative investors to a riskier portfolio on purpose, for whatever reason. I'm sure you are aware of investors that took some increased risk, such as longer-term fixed-income securities, and are now unhappy with that choice. At PTI, we have always stressed total portfolio risk awareness and tried to minimize chasing returns in a tough environment. Well, now it looks like maybe interest rates are moving more towards historical levels. Everyone needs to be aware of what that continued movement might do to your portfolio, both good and bad. We also have a stock market that seems to have stalled, at least for the short term. I think it's time for everyone to take a serious look at their goals, their risks, and their portfolios. Do they match? If not, we can help. We have a signature protected index program. We have ways to hedge against interest risk. We can make that portfolio right for you again. Go to PTISecurities.com or call us right now. The market can change very rapidly. That's PTISecurities.com.
Stocks, jocks,
stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now.
Lower Opex Tax Jacks. I'm Tom Holley. Mr. Matt Weber on the board. S&P futures up 25.50. It's the highest we've seen. It's the smaller highest I've seen. NASDAQ futures up 60. Dow futures up 189. So, we're trying to get back a chunk of what we lost on Monday. Didn't work out so well yesterday. We were there most of the day and then sold off on the close. We were actually down last night when the futures opened, but now we've flipped around to the upside here as the Fed is coming out with their decision today. And obviously, as the headlines say, Fed will try to soothe markets Wednesday while preparing investors for an end to bond buying. So prepare to be soothed, Matty. Over in Europe, we've got DAX up 106.7%. FTSE up more than that, though, up 88.13%. Same thing with the CAC round, up 79. It's a full 1.2%. Asia, Nikkei down 200.7%. Shanghai up 14.4%. Hang Seng, which is absolutely been getting trounced. They're in bear market territory. They're down over 20% from their high. They're up today 122.5%. They're taking the real brunt of these, the Chinese, government taking a hit at these, gambling places in Macau. And Hang Seng markets have just been getting pummeled. Bonds, 1.32 unchanged in the 10-year yield. The Bund unchanged minus 0.32. And Japan unchanged at positive 0.03. Everybody's waiting for the Fed. Oil, hover up 84 cents. It's 1.2%, 71.33. Brent up 89 cents, 75.25. Natural gas up 3 cents, 484. RBOB up a penny at 211. We've got gold down 350, was up a little bit earlier, 1774. Silver, however, up 7 cents, 2268. So they're maintaining their big rally the other day. And we've got crypto, Bitcoin slow and down $33 to 42,080. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather. Oh, by the way, individual stocks. We've got Federal Express that had earnings that came out and said inflation was hurting them. Stock opened down after that. Now it's down almost 14.50. Disney had some negative news yesterday as well. The stock was down as much as $6 or $7, but now this morning it's turned around to be up $1.50. So they've soothed the market and turned their stock around. Matty, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
37 minutes past the hour. Good morning once again to everyone out there. A couple of issues out in the western suburbs, Chief. We have a crash on the inbound Eisenhower just before St. Charles Road, which is exit 14. That crash has been moved to the right shoulder, but some congestion resulting from that, so expect delays coming out on I-290 heading from the west. Just south of there on the tri-state I-294, right off of I-290, there's a disabled vehicle blocking the right lane. That's right at Cermak Road and 22nd Street there on I-294, and that's causing delays heading on the northbound side of the tri-state. So a couple of issues not too far apart from each other, but on two separate expressways. Major delays on the Kennedy, but that's just traffic volume related. No accidents to report, but slow in both directions from O'Hare into downtown and vice versa. It's also affecting the Edens as well. Probably the rainy conditions are contributing to that. Stevenson moving slowly too, as are the Southside Expressway, so give yourself plenty of time as you're heading out this morning, even though there are no accidents on those expressways, just heavy traffic volume. Off the expressways, we have a crash, Yackley Avenue at College Road. That's in the southwestern suburbs. And then in Naperville, there's a crash at Winfield Road and Mack. But everything else all quiet out there. Weather today, clouds and rain on and off throughout the day, similar to yesterday, but a bit cooler. a high of just 64 degrees. Right now it is overcast and 61 downtown. For our Phoenix listeners, sunny with a high of 103 today. Right now it's clear and 75. In sports, White Sox magic number remains at 2. They lost yesterday to the Tigers 5-3, and Cleveland beat Kansas City, so no ground was made up, but the Sox can clinch the division today. They just need to win and have Cleveland lose, and they will be your Central Division champions here in 2021. Cubs lost to the Twins at Wrigley last night, 9-5. Diamondbacks lost to the Braves, 6-1. Chief.
So if you're home and the other team loses and you clinch, what do the players do? You just pop a champagne on by yourself, or do you head back to the park, or what do you do?
I think you pop it by yourself.
So you have to get, but they don't pay for any of that, so somebody gives them a bunch of cases of crummy champagne, or they give me a bottle of crummy champagne.
Yeah, you save it for the division series.
No, that's true. Who's the place
that's
the
official? By the way, guys, be nice to me. I already have my World Series ticket.
Why does that not surprise me, now that you are becoming one of these one percenter dudes?
I know. I'm just, you know.
Just saying.
Just saying. I don't want to dig too much into that.
World Series tickets to what?
Yeah, to what? To who?
For the Sox, just in case.
Really?
Yeah.
So what happens when they don't make it? Do you just, those are?
I think I get a credit.
Okay, fair enough.
I'm really not sure.
I have a longer a related question. Back in last time they were in the playoffs, especially with, you know, and then there wasn't even any COVID, so you had more tickets sold, I think. They, long about July or August, when they realized they had, you know, a good enough team, they started saying if you bought a 10, 12, 15, 20 game package, you know, in the end of the year, you'd be guaranteed playoff seats. I didn't hear anything like that this year, did you?
I didn't either. I did not hear that. And I remember, it's not just that, but there were people that got World Series tickets, but they were on the hook to get season tickets the following year.
That's their thing they're doing this year, and Sox fans are pissed. Yeah. Is that
that's what they did? That's what they did last time. And I know, I worked with a guy that figured out a whole big arbitrage about as long as they went, you know, as long as they played 3 World Series games at home, if they could scalp them, it would offset, you know, the tickets for the next year, and they could use 4 or 5 of the tickets next year and sell the rest of them to other people. And when it looked like it might not go as long as they were hoping, they actually hedged themselves by betting on one of the games in Vegas and making money off the whole thing.
Wow.
But that's why I remember all of that. It's just because I had a very astute reader friend that kind of cleaned up by figuring out all the different scenarios.
Well, I don't think you were, if you bought a 12-game package, and this is out of memory, you were guaranteed one of the games, like in the first round. You weren't guaranteed every single playoff game all the way through.
Right, right.
But now this year, I mean, I'm going to say, you know, you guys know more about Sox than I do, that their season ticket load, even now, is under 10. It's probably more like 8. I mean, the beginning of the year, beginning of last year, I'm thinking they must have dipped down to 5 or 6. Maybe not quite that low. So that leaves you with 42,000 seats. And they have a bunch of packages.
Well, they average, in 2021, the White Sox are averaging 19,800 tickets sold per game, per home game. So, I mean, what percentage of that do you think is season ticket holders?
Less than half.
I mean, and you
for the Cubs, it'd be higher.
You could be right. I don't know. But they're 13th right now in the big leagues in attendance in tickets sold, averaging 19,800. Cubs are 8th in attendance, averaging 24,000.
And I'll bet you that the Cubs season ticket load is 21 or 19. I bet they're
oh gosh, don't you think it's how many people can get into Wrigley?
Close to 40.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you know, you've got that ability where they'll sell some of your tickets for you now.
Well, right. That's very recent.
Yeah, which just makes it, you know, if you think about it, it nets out to being less costly.
Yeah, except they take a huge fee.
Yeah.
What I mean, it's got to be what Major League Baseball takes, what, 10%, Maddie, and ticket mass? I mean, if you're selling a $100 ticket, I are you even netting 75?
That I don't know, but it's better than zero,
which
was a lot of people's problem when they bought tickets and couldn't sell them at all.
But it would have been 10 or 15 years ago. Yeah.
Well, but I mean, the person obviously moved. helps me out here at PTI, Larry, he and his wife had, they actually bought the Merrill Lynch seats way back in the 70s, or the early 80s, because they were on the exchange floor. Merrill Lynch, for 1 year, get a load of this, this is how the world has changed. They had a bad year and it didn't want to be known as having, like, paying money for tickets and wasting money on stuff like that, so they dumped a lot of their season tickets countrywide, and one of them was the White Sox. So they ended up with the Merrill Lynch's season tickets, which were like fourth row behind home plate, which in the old park really sucked because you literally were below your head was below second base because they had to build up the field so much because they built the expressway, water would pop out of the sewers in a real heavy rain in the outfield. It was bad. Anyway, so I think they were number 12 or 25 or something on the season ticket list. And they ended up giving those up, you know, when they moved them. Well, plus when the scout seats came in, they moved them, and he didn't like his new seats. But I think that the, so that leaves them with probably 42,000. Now, the people who have the 12 and 20 game packages, guys on the floor had these forever. They had 20 games in the outfield. You got a couple good ones, a couple bad ones. Those are really nice packages that the Sox have. And they were like third row outfield. They were real nice seats. They get guaranteed some of the playoff games. I mean, if it's a best of five, they're going to get one of the games because somebody else might have the same seat for another 20 games, right? But I'm going to say the Sox are going to have an awful lot of playoff seats available to people that they don't owe them to.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I don't know how they...
So they're able to try to leverage that into, getting people to obligate themselves to next year, I guess.
Well, are you in the Bob Uecker seats? I mean, the ones you got?
No, I am in the Bob Uecker seats.
Well, because some guys from that I will have an adult beverage with once in a while. There's a place on what's the name of the place on 22nd and State, Manny? There's a bar there.
Buffalo Wings and Rings. Is that the one?
It doesn't sound like it, but on a
that might be on Halstead actually.
Well, they on a Sunday. Get a list if you buy the brunch.
Reggie's.
Yeah,
Reggie's. Yeah, that's right.
If you buy the brunch for $15, it includes a ticket to the game, the bus over and back, and beer on the bus and back. And you can eat, you can have the buffet again when you get back. So those guys did that a couple weeks.
And Rick Bundy.
Yeah, well, and the guy who owns the place went out and bought like some old school bus, like some small school bus, and runs people back and forth like himself, evidently. And one guy goes, "You don't want to hit a bump in that thing. Shocks and springs didn't come with the bus." but how's that for a deal? You go in the gate all the way down on the right field side, and you're in the upper deck of the, you know, the one nobody wants to sit. But he said they're tickets, and you can wind around the rest of the park and have a good time for, especially if you left late and come back early, you can see five innings or so, come back and eat again. So it's an unbelievable deal. But I think the Sox are going to have a lot of leverage. And now, are you in a? How many skyboxes do you think are unused, Manny? I bet they have a bunch that are unused.
In the White Sox stadium?
Yeah, yeah.
As far as unused as in unsold?
I think that there's some on the way on down in the end that were never even finished.
Could be. Yeah, I don't know.
They're finished.
But, I would assume they're finished. I've only been...
We get one skybox. We do a skybox thing once a year. And I think about two-thirds of them have corporate ownership. Just thinking from walking around on that level.
That's what I would think. Two thirds of them, about right.
Yeah.
I've always been to the Score one, and I've been to it, I don't know, seven or eight times.
Well, they got real nice, and they're right next to.
And theirs is nice because it's pretty close to behind home plate.
It's right next to Reinsdorf, and it's first level. It's terrific.
Yeah, and then but like Russell said, walking around that hallway, all of the ones I saw in that area were corporate owned. Now, when you get down to the ends, you know, maybe they're not. I don't know.
Well, the Score. I bet the Score doesn't have it anymore since they don't do the
sack. I think some of the ones that will have a White Sox logo on the door instead of a corporate logo are held back for limited partners as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can understand. We had a guy. I've told a story before. We had a guy who had he was a controller at Ticketmaster or Ticketron or one of the first iterations that got bought and then bought then bought then bought. And they had one at Wrigley and White Sox Park, and he'd tell us, he'd call us at 3 o'clock, "Hey, you guys want the skybox tonight? Nobody's using it." So then we'd hustle somebody over there and get the tickets. We actually had tickets. It was really neat. But, you know, the weird part of it was It's amazing how presentation makes a difference to when you buy something. Because Russell, those days, a beer was $5. This is, you know, talking the 80s. Beer is $5. So the price of stuff in the skybox is actually the same as it is around the rest of the park. They maintain, I don't know if they still do, but they did in those days. But it's one thing to have a guy show up and say, give me 4 beers, and he pours them for you and blah, 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 and you hand a guy $20 plus a tip. It's quite another when somebody walks in and hands you a case of beer and say, that'll be $120. Especially in the 80s, and you're going, say what?
Right.
And then the guy, well, here's your hot dogs. They give you the 12-pack of a ballpark Franks, and the guy goes, well, that's like $50. And you're going, really? Aren't you going to put these in the steamer and put the beer in the fridge? No, that's your job. The guy leaves. You're like, I just spent $160 on hot dogs and a case of beer, and I got to do it myself.
You're not doing it yourself when I'm in the box.
Here I am.
They actually open up the fridge and put the beer in there for you.
Well, so here,
and they don't, and you don't know what everything costs until the very end of the game. I know that for a fact.
Well, but I was.
I've been the one that's been signing the thing. So.
Well, we just paid cash because it was not our box. We couldn't sign. It was the Ticketmaster box. But I have a moral question for you guys, and maybe the listeners can opine in it. We'll make it a chief pool. We went one night, and of course we've got nothing, right? So we get the hot dogs. There must have been some accounting firm next to us, and at Cubs Park you can just not like Sox Park where they're nice. I mean, Cubs Park, in those days, when you walked outside, you could just hop right over into the one next to you. You know, so if you want to BS with the person next to you, you could come into your box, you go in his. I mean, you had to go over the rail, but I mean, unless you were in a wheelchair, you get over it real easy. Well, there must have been some accounting or law firm next to us. There's not a soul there. You wouldn't believe the spread inside. We're talking ribs, nachos, you name it, they had it. Italian sausage and a... up everything, and there's not a person there. Now, you know this is all going to be like handed out or go to waste. Now it's like the seventh inning and it's still sitting there. The smart thing to do would have been to ask the guy outside and say, hey, by the way, these guys aren't showing up. Is there any way we could, get somebody that's thrown over here? But I said, no, yeah. we're not going over. We're not doing that stuff. We're like real people. But I'm sitting there, a couple of guys are going, hey, it's just going to go away. So those ribs look pretty good. Let's put it this way. It was a dilemma, Maddie. What if it was your softball team? You'd have been fighting guys back, I think.
Oh, yeah, that would have been gone by the third inning.
God.
Well, I will fully admit that I have more than once climbed into a different skybox and raided their fridge when nobody was in it. It was not in Chicago. It was one time I was at a U2 concert in Atlanta. And we did it twice where the brokerage firm, whatever was next to the brokerage firm that owned the box that we would get to go to, whoever was next door would always go to Falcons games, but they never used it for concerts. But you could keep your own beer and stuff in there. So, you know, much like sneaking into the neighbor's garage and hitting their beer fridge when I was 15, I would jump around. It was pretty easy to jump from one to the other.
Well, there was usually a lock.
Oh, that's great.
Well, there's usually a lock on that. They usually had a lock on
it. In younger days, I would not do that now because I would act like a grown up.
Well, because you'd probably fall and break your neck.
I wouldn't discourage younger people from doing it.
Well, they always had a lock on the cabinet where the hard booze was, so you have to break the lock. I don't know nobody's going to do that. I don't think. But the fridge was wide open. The beer was. All right, I got to ask you, Russell. We talked a week or two ago regarding those two massive trades in the VIX November, which seemed to point, especially the one where the guy bought the VIX 80s in November and sold like the 55s in October, which if you're wrong on your timing could really stick you where the sun don't shine.
Yeah.
Well, but now in the last week or so, especially from, I get all the feeds from the people that are doing some of the interviewing and stuff at NFO and the Rebellion Partners and, you know, Giants groups and stuff. They've got like probably 3 or 4 guys on there, worldly learned guys, you know, like at your level, that are saying, I'm really afraid. November is my month I'm targeting. The market's going in the crapo. What exactly are all these people seeing? Is the Fed telling people they're going to start tapering to beat the ban in November? Something has got these guys fixated on November, and for the life of me, Russell, I can't put my finger on it. Can you?
I can't put my finger on it either, but in beyond the trade that you saw, I've seen more that seem to be looking for high volatility in November and low volatility in December. Not necessarily to the extreme point that you're talking about, but you know, more like just a seasonal aberration that we seem to see every year, where the volatility that's priced in comes down just because of all the holidays, because the volatility gets calculated with calendar days, not just trading days. And when you got three or four holidays over the next month, or three holidays over the course of 30 days, it tends to put pressure on volatility. So I'm seeing the traditional, seasonal trades. I'm seeing people putting them on early, too. And I don't know if they're putting them on early because they're expecting, a really big move up in November. But the why behind that one, I've tried and I don't see it. That's going to be one of those that, you and I will be talking the second or third week in November, and we'll be like, that's what they were setting up for.
Well, I'm still kind of sticking to my guns that if I had to guess, it would be a CPI number. Because
you think that enough on the inflation?
That somehow that those numbers are so managed by the Bureau of Labor Statistics, and if I had to even, this is, by the way, anybody listening, this is total speculation. I've heard rumors in about 15 different articles now regarding they have not. If you look at the price of houses, it's up, 40% or 25% in a year, 40% in the last however many years. But it's like 25% this year, right? Or 20. I mean, it's a huge number. And it hasn't worked its way into the statistics at all. If you look at the year-over-year housing, either the owner's equivalent rent or regular rent, it's 2 or 2.2%. So I've been reading that one of these months, they use the word catch up, that I think they're finally going to have to, they can't keep putting that out there. They look like a bunch of morons. They're going to have to put a number in there on housing, and that they're going to drop a 10%. That could be why they think the CPI number is going to be November. Maybe they're going to drop a 5 or 6 number on the housing, or 7 or 8 or 10. In November is sort of a catch-up, and that's a pretty reasonable amount of your basket. It's probably like 20% or more. It should be more than that. But so if they do that, November could be the outlier. But it has to be something that if you know the mechanism and you know the people, it has to be some kind of a catch-up number, or we're finally going to come clean, or this has been a lagging one and we're finally going to add it, or we're going to change, the percentage of the housing basket from 20 to 30 the same month we hit everybody up with a 5% move. I mean, I think something like that is in the wind, Russell. And out of all the other numbers I look at, that's probably the only one I can think of that would be so discreet that you wouldn't see
coming. Thinking about the calendar while you were talking, if you're using November derivatives, you could be setting up for something in late October, and that's earnings. Maybe you're starting to get a feeling that the fundamental, that the macro situation, whether it be inflation or supply chain disconnects or whatever, that it's really going to catch up with a lot of companies in the quarter that we're operating in right now, and we're going to have a terrible earnings season, and you're set up for that.
Well, we were talking last night with some people, and one of my attorney buddies. And he agrees with me. You got to get these federal people back to work. The idea that the courts aren't working and the federal, the city deeds department isn't working. I mean, this is nuts. Okay, if you have your vaccinated, you're going to get it. But guess what? We're all going to get it or something. I mean, at some point you got to.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's just gagging. You haven't been downtown. We're back to where we were last year. I mean, with the second mask mandate, it's sort of crazy. Yeah. I think some of these earnings are going to be horrible, especially if they start putting any kind of an inflation hedge on the revenue numbers.
Very possible that a lot of things that companies have been able to manage, they just can't manage anymore, and it's going to show up in the earnings numbers.
Well,
that would cause excess volatility for November derivatives. You know, if things start to smooth out going into the year end, then it would be less volatility for the December ones.
So are you going to the Indiana game this weekend?
Am I going to the Indiana game this weekend? No, I am not.
Right, I didn't think so.
I'm like you, and you talking about the Wisconsin Notre Dame game. I will find a much more comfortable place to watch it where it's not a nightmare to go back and forth.
Well, that's the truth, buddy. Take care of yourself. Talk at you next week. SP Futures up 25, NASDAQ Futures up 60. We'll be back tomorrow. Stocks and Jacks.
What did we learn, Palmer?
I don't know, sir.
I don't know either. I guess we learned not to do it again.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to PTISecurities.com. PTI ProDirect. Trade for as low as a penny per share and a dollar per option contract. Learn more at PTIProDirect.com. Nadex, offering an intuitive way to trade the financial markets. Visit Nadex.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. Hamzy Analytics. Listen to Fari Hamzy every other Thursday and visit HamzyAnalytics.com. ChiroMed. Back or neck pain? Schedule a complimentary consultation by calling 708-403-2727. DAX Research. Tune in for David Andelman's technical analysis on Mondays and Thursdays and call 1-800-821-4968.